Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Saturn Vox podcast, where discussions of philosophy meet the liminal space we weave in dreams. This is your host and strong advocate for the healing properties of the Marshall Current, Mikala Ann. This week, we welcome mystic, sorcerer, artist, and writer David Davis onto the pod to chat about meeting and making sense of the Marshall mystery. The future is still being dreamed up by all of us. Are you honoring the revolutionary spark of madness that inspires someone to go out and do something? David and I chat about Mars as the moment of radicalization, the initiatory moment of the surgeon's knife as it cuts out what is making the self and society sick. We speak on donning the cloak of the monster and the sensuality of mysticism as we navigate new ways to speak narratives which allow us to use Mars's power of hatred and discernment to bind the oppressor and reframe our stories towards that of liberation and compassion for all beings. How do we calculate and generate martial energy in productive and liberating ways? In what ways does shame protect us from our own tendencies towards violence? What does it mean to be in active service and communion with martial energy? And why is it that the best weapon against Mars is also Mars? We touch on healing, revolution, and the power of anger to get shit done. Join us for this pertinent and important conversation towards allowing in a heated knife to cauterize wounds. All this and more poetry on today's episode of Saturn Vox. This episode is brought in part by listeners like you. If you want to support the show and its humble host, hop on over to the Patreon at www.patreon.com/SaturnVox, where you can listen to extended episode content and join in on our community Discord server.
Hello. Thank you for having me. My name is David. As you just said, I am I'm excited to be here today to talk about a few different things, but just a quick rundown of who I am and what I do. I'm a mystic, an artist, a writer, a diviner, educator, based out of Michigan. I'm also a sorcerer of the sort of primarily planetary variety. And I for the past few years have been focusing on Mars a lot, martial magic and mysticism a lot, throwing in some other planets in there as well, and then, you know, exploring the similarities and differences between them. But yeah, Mars has been home base for me. That current has been home base for me for a little while, and it's going to be that way for the next few years, per the plan. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm coming from. Yeah, like culturally, like coming out of the hoodoo tradition. So like there's also some sort of social and like cultural background with that as well. But like my operative work and most of my devotional work is centered around the planetary stuff. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, I love that. And oh, of course, you're so welcome. I've actually been wanting to have you on for a while, so I feel very blessed that we were able to carve out this time, which is actually a very martial metaphor.
Yeah.
Of
yeah.
I'm very interested in your phrasing of martial mystic. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you could give me a bit more on what you mean when you combine those two terms as opposed to the planetary sorcerer that I think a lot of us are more familiar right. with?
So I absolutely, I love that question. So there, so I guess, you know, setting terms. So for me, mysticism, and I've been calling myself a mystic for a few years now, even like in college, right, when I was actively publishing poetry, Like I was referring to it as like mystical poetry. I was referring to myself as a mystic, the art I was making. And this is like 2015, 16, 17, 18, like the art I was making was what I was referring to as mystical art. And for me, mysticism, I tend to just use what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of generally agreed upon definition or idea of it, where it's like just action in service of communion, right? So the sort of communion with some greater power. And so, yes, there's the operative element behind my magic, right? Like, you know, how can you tap into these different planetary sources, these currents, which is another thing that helps frame what I mean. Possibly on like a visual level, because naturally mysticism is very abstract, right? And so, there's definitely like operative elements that come out of that, you know, like actual rituals and how to, you know, martial blockbusters and different curses and stuff like that. But, you know, for me, that mysticism looks like, you know, I'm not an astrologer. And so, you know, that's an important thing to note when it comes to how I approach the planets. I'm not approaching them as deities, as planets even. I'm approaching them as these currents, these sort of like abstract boundaries that I am immersing myself into. I use a lot of beach imagery, sort of me standing on the shores of a particular current and sort of going from standing on the shore to, you know, dipping your toes in, to wading, to swimming, to being consumed by that body. And then through just continued work and devotion and operative stuff as well, because like there's definitely an element, or there can be an element of communion with like operative work as well. But even though that might not be the goal of it, of that particular working. But until you eventually get to a point where you are kind of consumed by that body, and you sort of meet or begin to meet and make sense of the capital M mystery at the center of that current, right? And so like for me, that martial mysticism, that martial mystery, or that presence is what I am seeking communion with, and through my work, my writing, my meditations, etc., sort of getting glimpses of that and sharing that with the world and all its carnivorous monstrousness. So yeah, that's what I mean by that.
Oh my gosh, I loved that so much. I think you really elucidated. I'm in a class with Claire Fanger right now, and she is kind of trying to get us to understand that the term mystic is like a new term, and a lot of the people that we would call mystics would not have referred to themselves that way. And I feel like the way that you explained it, she would have been like, yes, that's it. That is it. So I really adore what you said. It's about that communion and with the current of the mystery. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. So I also don't consider myself an astrologer, and I think people would potentially be surprised by that because I talk a lot about the planets too, but I feel a kinship with you because I view it very similarly to how you do. I guess like this isn't necessarily about Mars, but my follow-up question about mysticism would be, and this is somewhat potentially related to your practice with hoodoo as well, do you view these currents as an abstraction of some sort of all being or all energy that you are trying to parse out different aspects of the currents of, or am I misunderstanding that?
I think I haven't, you know, I'm very transparent with like where I am in my mystical journey, both as a whole and, or at least I try to be, both as a whole and just like when it comes to the individual planetary currents. I haven't really gotten to that point yet of starting to parse that out. The closest I got to it, or was starting to sort of orient myself towards it, is when I was, and I plan on getting back into this work, you know, in a few years, but when I was starting to explore the sort of dual nature of the sun, right? Looking to the sun as deity, and that malefic side, likening that aspect of that current, of that mystery, to the god that my ancestors within the sort of like Afro-diasporic space would have called on in the name of like revolution. And there's definitely that revolutionary aspect in the martial work as well. And that's one of the main reasons why I am and will continue to be focusing on it. And I'm sure we'll get into it later on, just talking about the mysticism of action as a martial practice. But yeah, so like, I can't answer whether or not you're misunderstanding it, because I don't know yet. So I'm still kind of figuring it out.
You know, I respect that answer immensely. And I feel like it really points to your honoring of the ancestors, because another thing that I've been learning is that it's the Western tendency to want to name things. It's the Western, and this is martial in its own way, because to name is to dominate, yes. Right? But does that in a way take us further from these revolutionary ideas? Whereas allowing yourself to be uncertain, mm-hmm. and to say, I'm just not sure, is perhaps in another martial sense more brave than trying to dominate.
Absolutely. It's like you're, you know, that martial frenzy, I relate it to like lightning, right? Like it's ephemeral. Mm. It's just a flash, right? And if you caught it, you caught it. And if you didn't in that moment, you didn't. You're never going to get that same exact opportunity again, because no two bolts of lightning are the exact same. And they don't, you know, as the saying goes, right? They don't strike in the same place, right? And so it's just about sort of, I would argue this is also just like the core of mystical practice. It's like catching those flashes when you can, whenever you can and wherever you can. As they choose to reveal themselves to you. And that requires a very high level of intentionality and focus and stillness, which is not very martial at all, at least not in my experience, the idea of sitting still. but it does require that to a certain extent. Like if you want to catch that lightning bolt, you kind of have to be a bit calculating and strategic with sort of where you need to end up in order to see it in its glory in that flashing moment.
Oh, I adored that. And even like Mars being in Scorpio right now and you using words like calculating, mm-hmm. and strategic are such Scorpiotic words, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Scorpion being one of those spirits that I work with closely, coming out of the martial current. There's this realm of venom, of the calculating armored creature, that sort of approaches conflict in a very systematic way, right? It isn't just out here spewing venom out of every orifice on, you know, with every step it takes. It savors it, right? There's that very pointed weapon that it can use and choose to use at any given moment. So yeah, yay Scorpions. I love Scorpions.
Me too. I have a soft spot for Scorpios, honestly.
Kind of jealous of them. I walk around with a lot of like Scorpion jewelry on, and I get all the questions like, are you a Scorpio? I'm like, at this point, I'm just going to start saying yes, because I'm tired of the question and having to explain like, no, here's why I'm wearing a Scorpion necklace.
There's that uncertainty, like, I'm not going to let you pin me down, that revolutionary aspect of you can't dominate me. I feel like we've been pinpointing some potentially positive and potentially negative aspects of Mars here, even in me saying like, oh, there's a difference between being brave and the drive to dominate. And I also would push back just a little bit on your phrasing of Mars not having a passive, mm-hmm. quality. Just I am a Cancer Mars, so like I have to push back on that. Yeah, oh really? Yeah. Oh my gosh, bless us.
Yeah.
I do feel like there's a passivity there, though, and like a sense of trying to calculate when one should act, and that there is something potentially martial about that. So with all of that on the table, my question is more like, can you give us a bit of a breakdown on what Mars in both the positive and the negative, or the passive and the active, or however you want to phrase it, aspects of this energy?
Yeah, for sure. And that's a, yeah, thank you for that challenge, because like that's something to like chew on a bit more. Like what does a passive Mars look like, and more so feel like, because my, not more so, but sort of also feel like, because my magical practice in general is very sensual in nature. It's very like body oriented.
I mean, that's a mystic quality if there
ever
was one.
It's like, so it's not just like how to conjure things sort of on an external level, how to sort of, like I said, it's not just the operative stuff. It's, I want to feel them. I want to smell them. I want to taste them, et cetera. But yeah, like, I guess starting with the, maybe negative, or things that are sort of more prone to like causing harm if not handled correctly. That's how I would like to phrase that.
There you go.
Extremeness, right? Like, Mars operating at the extreme end of things. There is a time and a place for that. And of course, if we're looking at magic and mysticism as like, as how it can be applied in a full, well-rounded sort of practice, like absolutely that's something that should be sort of tempered every now and again, right? I'm not suggesting that people should be operating like, should be like on 10, 100% of the time. That's just not healthy. But like within the vacuum of that mystical work, I think there is something to be said for the power of, and I'm kind of all over the place right now, but for the power of operating at the extreme end of things, right? As it as that extreme exists, like within your current capacity. And then once you find that baseline, Mars invites you to sort of push beyond that in whatever way you can. So like the highest pressure, finding the highest pressure that you can withstand, the highest heat, the highest volume, and then seeing how much further you can sort of go beyond that, right? Like Mars, I see it as this presence of like contortion, sort of things bursting at the seams, sort of bending the body, and more importantly, the will, right? Because of course there's that martial connection to like willpower, right? And you mentioned domination earlier, like bending your will, or maybe even the will of someone else, sort of out of its original shape into a shape that like is totally unrecognizable, monstrous even, right? Because there's, I see Mars as that, I don't label myself a witch, but I see a lot of martial connection, and this isn't original to me, but like I like to lean into the sort of the way that martial imagery and energy shows up in a lot of like traditional witchcraft dialogue and discourse, as Mars being that initiatory fire. Sasha Ravitch's like Salem Witch Fest lecture this past year about like Mars is like night surgeon, right? Sort of cutting the witch body open and filling it with, you know, iron shavings and powdered rust and bones and the blood of other animals, right? And you become this like chimeric thing that is sort of operating in service of that martial mystery. And so like, yes, that like that's very like, I guess, a very romantic answer. But of course, like extremism can be mishandled and misdirected. One of the reasons why I really felt drawn to the scorpion was because the imagery I like to use is I had all this venom pent up in me, and I was kind of just spewing it, like I sort of alluded to earlier, out of every orifice, and I was harming myself, I was harming other people. And so I needed that weapon, that stinger, to concentrate that malice. so that it can be more like methodically applied in specific situations, so that yes, when the time sort of comes for you to just, for you to spew all over the place, because there is a time and a place for that kind of just like ecstatic hatred. but there is more often than not you need that that pointer, that stinger, that fang, that something to sort of channel all of that through.
Ah, I loved this. And one of the things that it was making me think is, well, neither of us are astrologers, so I'm not gonna presume to step on any astrologer's toes, but I was often told as a Cancer Mars to like avoid working with Mars. And as time has gone on, I have found that the best weapon against Mars is Mars. Yes. And this, so it became more clear to me, especially over the past couple of months, how desperately I actually needed Mars as someone with Mars in Cancer, and that if I were to continue to avoid it, I was going to continue to spew my anger, my hatred, my desperation, just as a poison around even people that I loved, because you kind of get to a point where you just snap after that like prolonged period of passivity. So I think it's very beautiful that you came to that on your own, and it sounds like through your workings with Mars, you've gained a deeper sense of clarity and confidence to the self, which does, well, I mean, Aries is the sign of the sun's exaltation. So there obviously is a connection between Mars and the sun. It sounds like you've thought about that previously. So could you elucidate some more on the connection between those two?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, like I'm a third decan Leo. Like the first day of the third decan, right? So like that solar martial connection, that sort of co-rulership already exists like in my chart. I feel as though that's a very interesting connection to make. I alluded to earlier like that connection between, or that dual nature of the sun, the benefic and the malefic aspect, and how that malefic aspect of the sun does share a lot of the bestial characteristics with Mars, right? Very blood-oriented, very wild, very warrior-like in its sort of like manifestations and applications. And of course, like there's that connection with the sort of the revolutionary spirit, right? Like that spark that radicalizes someone and makes them want to like go out and do something about something. And so, yeah, I definitely see that connection there. And just to touch on what you were saying about the best weapon against Mars, like being Mars, there, I mentioned that contortion, that sort of bursting at the seams. When you reach that extreme point where your sort of body, whether it be the physical body and or the sort of spirit body, can no longer hold all of that fire. You know, when it comes to like martial remediation, as it exists in my practice, like, I, you know, there needs to be that tempering. And some of it is definitely a cooling down, right? These are acts of cooling. So I might sort of, if things are getting a bit too hot, but I don't want to sort of get rid of the fire entirely, I might do some like benefic solar work, like on myself or in my space, to sort of bring like a cooler light, a cooler fire, that's still empowering in its own way, but it isn't so destructive, right? But I have found that some acts of martial remediation require leaning further into that frenzy, so that you can kind of explode in a way, with the hope, the faith, right? Because there's that mysticism, it's irrational, right? That faith that there is a larger vessel waiting for you. Like you are exploding. You are a smaller vessel exploding within a larger vessel. And then now it's time for you to sort of reach a new extreme, right? A new height. My martial practice as it exists, you know, in the year of our Lord, 2023, looks very different than the one that existed in 2022 and 2021, right? Because it's been this constant state of like, all right, well, I've reached this extreme. Is that it? Something in me is telling me no. Let me like lean into it a bit more. Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I'm sort of just a pile of like viscera on the floor. That's sort of being reformed in the body of some larger thing. And then that's eventually going to sort of explode and then sort of be reformed into something else. Something larger, something that can withstand higher heats, higher pressures. Yeah. I hope that answers your question.
No, it did. I loved that. I think there is something very powerful and profound to using the sun to help cool the intensity of the martial fire, because I feel like a lot of ways that like urge to dominate comes from a misunderstanding or an unknowing of the self. And in order to calm that fire and recognize who the self, and this is of course only true in some cases, and I think we will expand on that when we transition into talking about the revolutionary aspects of Mars, but if we're talking just about our interpersonal relations, it's like what makes you so angry is oftentimes being mistreated or misunderstood. And in that way, like Mars is a teacher trying to say yourself needs something. Yes. But you don't often know what that thing is. It's like you're scraping at the eyes of the other because you can't see yourself. And bringing the sun in, that is a truly profound remediation technique. And I'm honestly going to add that tip into my own arsenal. In terms of you noting that your practice has shifted it for Mars, I have like an intuitive feeling based off of the way that I have seen you post on the internet lately that this is what you're talking about, the revolutionary quality, because the need for Mars as revolutionary has become more and more palatable. Not that it wasn't apparent already, but as each year since COVID has gone on, it's almost as if that revolutionary Mars is tapping at the window of everyone's peripheral vision, saying change is coming whether you want it or not, and how are you going to direct it?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely this sort of mysticism of these different martial abstractions, action, hatred, violence, rage, these manifestations that exist within this current. They're definitely, like you said, scratching at the peripheral of just everyone right now. And you know, whether some folks want to acknowledge it or not, it's there, it's present. And it, you know, I think about sort of where I am at right now with this mysticism and sort of me approaching and sort of entering into dialogue with these different abstractions, these different martial abstractions. I'm framing this work as like an appropriation of that very apocalyptic fire and brimstone theology that a lot of people are familiar with, right? Whether we personally or just through like media and stuff like that. It's like, it's an acknowledgement that like, yeah, like the end or at least an end is nigh, right? And if I have to be the person on the corner with the sign, like repent now, except like repent looks like something different in this case. Like, sure, like some people have to sort of be very direct with like what is happening. And sort of like, what does it look like to act with the same urgency and like quasi-religious fervor that we see on the right, right? And in like the sort of evangelical space, like, right? Because those people, like, they're convinced that like the world is ending and they have a role to play in the sort of rebuilding of something, right? Or the saving of something. And I believe that the sort of foil to that on the side of the revolutionary is that sort of martial understanding that, like, well, they're not entirely wrong, but we need to sort of reframe their urgency, reframe that sort of fiery faith and that locomotive will into a more like collective liberation that doesn't look like killing Black and brown folks and, you know, demonizing queer people. So I definitely sort of see that coming in, and yeah, that's one of the main ways that it's shifted. I always saw Mars as like other, because always being since like the beginning of this like martial journey that I've been on for the past few years, because of the association with monstrousness, right, with taboo, even in like the Picatrix, right, like you Mars rules over things like, you know, abortions, right, like these things that mainstream society, religious society specifically, you know, sort of Christian, evangelical Christian society, is like, oh, that's taboo, like you're not supposed to do that. But it's like Mars is the one willing to sort of invade the body in that way and sort of do things that the sort of mainstream God is not willing to do. They're willing to go into places that they're not willing to go. There's definitely that element, and that's the main way that it's shifted for me in the past year, but specifically, you know, we're looking at what's happening in Palestine and in the Congo and Sudan and all of the actions that are being taken worldwide in response to those things, and my work for the past month has been like, what does mysticism in response to that look like? What does it look like to root a movement in a sort of a mysticism, I'm using the word mysticism a lot, a mysticism of hatred, of action, hatred of oppression, right? Hatred of the oppressor. How, you know, you have to hate something bad enough to like not want it to exist anymore, right? And you're looking around and it's like, I posted something and I forget who like said this, but it was like a quote and it was like, y'all don't hate white supremacy enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need to hate this shit. Like, it's not enough to just, we saw this language come out of 2020 and the sort of Black Lives Matter protests, where there was this revelation collectively of like, it's not enough to just like not be racist. You have to be actively anti-racist. You have to become the enemy of racism. You have to become a traitor to whiteness. And all of those are very, absolutely. And all of those are very martial qualities to position yourself as the enemy of something, in service of a greater cause. Cause the warrior doesn't just fight for no reason, right? They're being directed by something else, something larger with an agenda in mind. So out here, I'm trying to build an army.
I love that for you. I support it 100%. It's very much where my martial practice finds itself as well. I don't know that I would call myself a revolutionary currently, but it is my praxis as a student to learn how to enact revolution in the future, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
I will propose to you a rather tough philosophical question that I personally have been chewing on, that everything you were just saying was making me think. So I'll lay it out for you. Mars as monster implies that there is a monster. To embrace monster as other is to say like, there is an other, and that other is me as queer. That other is you as queer, Black and brown. You know, that other is all of those who are facing oppression, and we have been condemned as monster by the general society. And that does like give Mars something to feed on. Mars is both the oppressor and the oppressed in this situation. And where I get stuck, and maybe it doesn't matter because it's not going to stop my revolutionary agenda. It's not going to stop me from fighting for people's rights. It's not going to stop me from being a person who hates oppression. But I get stuck in this sensation that both are needed for Mars to play out. And in that way, I guess what I'm asking is, do you believe that there is a way out of this dichotomy? And if so, what might Mars present itself as if we stopped, or if we as revolutionaries were able to smash the oppressor? I don't want to fall into what Paulo Freire talks about in his, you know, that the oppressed carry the heart of the oppressor inside of them. And, you know, like, I see this very clearly with Israel. I think that the existence of Israel as a state is one of the most abhorrent things that has happened. But when I look at the history of oppression that Jewish people have undergone, being Jewish myself and knowing, you know, the ancestral trauma that I have to work at undoing in my own dead, I am able to, like, understand that what is playing out is exactly what Freire was talking about. It's like Zionists are so afraid of being oppressed. They only know power to look like the oppressor. And so then when they are given any sort of agency, they don on the armor of the oppressor, because in their mind, that's what gives them power. And it's just like a reversal of the roles. So in for me, my revolutionary quest and why I say that I'm still very much a student is because a part of what I would like to work out is, how do we auto overturn these narratives? How do we not become the warrior who vanquishes a monster who is oppression in my mind? How do we stop the oppressor from viewing ourselves as a monster? And what shape will Mars take if we are able to rewrite the story to be more about interdependence between all beings?
I want to start by saying I also don't view, I don't feel as though I've earned the title of, like, activist, right? Lane Smith, a friend of mine, they've done some writing recently on their Instagram about the activist, the journey of activism starting with an initiation, right? That moment of radicalization is an initiatory moment. And from what I recall, I don't believe it was written of, like, on their platform in an explicitly, like, martial context. I believe they used the magician in the tarot as that moment, as a sort of, like, post-fool moment, the fool being naivety and the magician being like, oh, wait, there's actually stuff happening and I have to do something with it. So there's that sort of initiatory spark. And I just wanted to throw that out there because I'm careful not to position myself as, like, an authority in the realm of, like, revolutionary politics, right? I'm seeing the world, I'm living in it, I'm responding to it in my own way. So to sort of then jump into your very beautiful question, I'm thinking about passive, like Mars in their passive state in response to that question. We think about Mars and the active state as vanquisher, but Mars also has a capacity to bind things, iron chains, iron cages. And so when we vanquish that beast that is oppression, that is colonialism, right? Is it a situation where, instead of just slicing the beast up into a million and one pieces and sort of scattering it to the wind, and sort of hoping that none of those pieces take root and sort of regrow in some other way, right? In some other sort of manifestation, what would it look like to vanquish the beast, cut it up into a million and one pieces, and then bind it, right? I see this in a very practical sense. It's just like not forgetting history, because that's oftentimes what that's what we're looking at. That's a lot of the sort of discourse that's coming out of this sort of in response to like Zionism. It's like y'all are, you're repeating history, right? And so instead yes. of vanquishing that, and vanquish is a strong word because that would imply that anti-Semitism was vanquished at any point. But you sort of, for the sake of simplicity and sort of condensing it into this narrative, the beast was vanquished. And it, like I said, it was scattered to the wind and it was allowed to grow in a new form, to regrow in a new form, instead of vanquishing it and then binding it, sort of having it as a reminder of what can never be born again, right? We have to do everything in our power to make sure that something like this is never born again. I'm thinking about, I forget their names, but these Christian mystics, they were executed, and they were skinned alive and their bodies were put in these iron cages and sort of hoisted up at the top of this church as a reminder, in Germany, as a reminder of like, maybe France. Anyways, hey, like this is, you know, this is what happens, right? Like when you do this, when you sort of take it too far, right? And I believe they're still there to this day, right? Like these iron cages with just wasted away, skinned corpses in them. And like I said, in these iron cages. And so I that's a very big question. That's all the answer I have right now. Just kind of what does it look like to vanquish and bind as opposed to vanquish and then kind of move on as if nothing ever happened.
Yes. I don't think that there is a way for either of us to speak. You know, again, uncertainty mm-hmm. is brave. We don't have to have an answer, but it's important to Absolutely. Talk about. I love your response, though, to carry the, and this is another weird thing, because I often am like, get rid of shame. But then I notice, like, sometimes when people have never really experienced shame, the shamelessness that they enact upon the world can be quite destructive. And it makes me wonder, you know, that there's actual positive results to shame mm-hmm. in some ways, of like the memory of what not Absolutely. To do, the memory of what causes harm. It reminded me of an Instagram post that I read, and I don't remember where from or the name of the woman it was about, but it was about a woman who, upon moving to Israel right when the state was made, and she walked into the house that they had allotted her, and she saw that the family that had been exiled from that house had left things behind. And the story said she actually walked out and went to the government and was like, there's no way that I will live in a house where what was done to me in World War II is now happening to someone else. That's not liberty. It shocks me in a lot of ways that that wasn't the response from all of the Jewish people. But again, like, I know that a part of it does come from their fear of being oppressed. And that leads me to this question of, like, when we talk about Mars as monster, I think there is an important aspect to learning to love the monster. Some monsters deserve to be loved. Maybe sometimes the monster needs to be maimed and then re-educated. I'm struggling to pinpoint the question because it's kind of abstract, but I guess it's like, are we really aiming to get rid of the monster or give the monster a new face or to give the monster a new home or to teach the monster new habits? Does that make
sense?
Yeah,
it does. And there's, it speaks to the presence of multiple monsters, right? Like we're dealing with I view the planetary currents, I speak of them oftentimes as ecosystems, right? Like when you immerse yourself into a current, you are exposing yourself to the flora, the fauna, the ghosts, the other, you know, the powers of places and actions and stuff, like, you know, all of that stuff exists within that current. So there are multiple monsters, and all of them, and like you mentioned earlier, like there is a monster of colonialism in the martial space, right? That monster of sort of expansion for expansion's sake, for sort of domination, right? Of just sort of slaughter, of massacre, right? Like that exists in there. And like what? Yeah, I don't like what does that look like? Does it look like vanquishing it and sort of binding it to the bottom of that sea so that it can never, you know, rise again? Or like you said, does it look like sort of renaming it? I do think there's something to be said for like the importance of loving that monster, of embracing your monster, not that as in the colonialism, but like your monster, and sort of leaning into that. I joke with like friends and stuff, like I call myself evil, right? Just like there's a piece, an essay that I've recently become a bit of an evangelist for by Ismatu Gwendolyn, called "There Is No Revolution Without Madness," right? And how it talks about the relativity of insanity, and how capital R reason has been infused with this dogma. This white supremacist dogma, and these systems, they get to decide what is and isn't sane, just like they get to decide what is and isn't monstrous. Looking at, you know, the theology behind like manifest destiny, for example, that's monstrousness. I don't care how you want to sort of dress it up as this like white clad woman hovering over the land, right, and bringing light with her. That's you know, and I'm sort of aware of
that's
scary. Like
me.
that's you know, demonic. And I understand like the sort of irony of me using that word in the sort of occult space, but like using demonic as sort of like a pejorative. But like in the most like mainstream sense of the word, like how that word would be using around, you thrown around, like that is evil, right? That is wicked. But because that has become the status quo, and that baseline gets to decide that they get to decide that they're good and that we're bad just for not wanting to exist in that paradigm, then yeah, fuck it, I'll be bad, right? I'll be evil, I'll be wicked, yep. I'll be that monster. Right. And it's like you're supposed, I think that's what the revolutionary should strive towards. We see that again, like in the discourse surrounding like terrorism, right? Who gets to decide what counts as terrorism? And isn't it funny that it's almost always like the sort of black and brown people rising up, that like those are always the terrorists, but like the American Revolution, that isn't seen, you know what I'm saying? Like that's not seen as terrorism, or yeah.
You know what happened in the movement of Save Wanalili Forest, mm-hmm. the Stop Cop City stuff? They used the anti-terrorism mm-hmm. law to take those activists and put them right. in jail under like intense federal crimes for all they were doing was trying to save Absolutely. A rainforest.
And like, if that's evil, then I'll be that. You know what I'm saying? Like if it, like I'll be that. And exactly. So it's I probably didn't answer the full question, but like that's kind of just like where I'm at right now. Like in sort of feeding your own monster, so that when you do face that other monster in the wild, right, and that sort of martial ecosystem, that wilderness, that inferno, as I like to refer to it as, then you can face it and slay it and bind it or whatever needs to happen in that moment. But yeah, I don't know what sort of comes after with, you know, like you mentioned, any sense of certainty. It's still being dreamed up by all of us collectively, dreamt up by all of us collectively. And so I think it's up to us to decide like what and who the monster looks like slash is after all of this is done, because it will be done at some point. I have faith.
Yeah, me too. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a point to it, would there? One of the things that this is reminding me of is like the neoliberal aversion to the word power. You'll notice like if you try to say like I want power or I seek power, or you try to label yourself as a person who, even if you are an oppressed person and you're saying like I am seeking the power to liberate myself, there is an unease in the neoliberal concept to the striving of power. And I think you can even see it in the way that the history of Martin Luther King has been whitewashed to being a person who was a complete pacifist when that wasn't actually true in its entirety. Do you have any words to speak to people who might still be struggling with an identity that allows them to claim power, where they may feel more comfortable with that call?
I have a lot of words.
Yay.
So I feel like oftentimes there's this, and you know, I'm speaking to like the wider sort of like liberal sphere, but also like specifically like Black and Brown people who identify with the sort of like liberal ideologies. Because a lot of that aversion to power, aversion to violence, aversion to, like I said, hatred, and to rage, it comes down to respectability, right? You want to be able to coexist with your oppressor, right? In a way where no one is being in this sort of like weird utopia question mark, where like you're coexisting with your oppressor and no one is kind of like taking up too much of the other person's space, right? And my sort of argument, a little ism I like to throw around, is like, if respectability worked, it would have worked by now, right? If people being good by society's standards, if people being, you know, righteous or whatever by society's standards, if that worked, then we would have already been liberated. If we could talk our way through it, if we could strictly sort of march our way through it and legislate our way through it, then that it would have been done. We're not dealing with a situation where the system can be fixed, right? We're not dealing with a situation. We're not dealing with a system that is capable of gaining empathy. Its root is in violence against us, right? And yes. No matter how many, you know, rose petals you try to super glue onto an apple tree, every time it's time for that tree to bear fruit, it's going to be an apple, right? This world was, this system, right, as it exists, was rooted in evil, right? It was rooted in a violence against us. It was rooted in a colonial monstrousness, and it has to be uprooted. There is no sort of, there is no true success within it. You know, Black capitalism, queer capitalism, you know, women capitalism, you know, breaking the glass ceiling, that's not going to save us, right? Getting rid of capitalism is going to save us.
Yes.
And so that's how I would respond to that. It's like, work through that respectability. And Mars is a perfect sort of lens to sort of explore that journey through, because Mars, like, is other. Mars is taboo, right? Mars makes you more comfortable being like the only person in the room saying something, right? A very specific thing, because they just don't give a damn. They have they're very locomotive in their approach to things. And so it's like, once that train has left the station, it'd be best for you to get out of the way, because you're not going to stop it without getting seriously injured or worse. And so it's just like, let the train leave the station. Lean into, you know, there is no revolution without madness, right? Like, lean into that crazy, because yes, that crazy, if your oppressor sees you as sane or good, you're doing something wrong. They're supposed to see you as insane, and just sort of bad and diametrically opposed to everything they stand for. So I guess that's how I would respond to that.
Yeah, if the fear is that they're going to come for you, my God, they're already coming for you. Fight, fight. I think this also speaks to the healing power of violence, which I think is another thing that people find very uncomfortable. And it's something, you know, I'm obviously not saying that you should just wantonly wave the sword around, but if you are afraid to ever pick the sword up, you're really doing nothing but allowing the poison to continue.
Absolutely. And like, just can't emphasize enough, like there has to be that element of strategy, right? The understanding that violence could take many forms, right? We experience economic violence at the hands of capitalism, right? What is a boycott if not a reversal of that economic violence, right? I'm going to take money out of your pocket.
Yes.
We're not allowed to live in a state of peace, right? We're not allowed to go anywhere without being policed and just being reminded of the horrors that this world has bred, that this system has bred. And so, like, why should the people who perpetuate it be, you know, able to live in peace, right? Like, show up and be loud and take up space and, like, make it impossible for them to be able to ignore you.
And I think that even, like, speaks as well to, like, to embracing and donning the cloak of the monster, because insofar as you are attempting to remain in your quote unquote humanness, you won't allow yourself to truly challenge the system of humanness that has fed you.
Because who gets to be human, right? Like that's political in and of itself, the label of human.
Absolutely.
I'm as a Black person, it's like, it's not too long ago that like I was considered what, like 3/5 a person. And so it's like that, who, you know, we talk about powers being able to decide what is sane, powers being able to decide what is good. They also get to decide what is human, and how those, you know, whether or not you're human, and if you are human, how much of a human are you? What kind of a human are you? And it all always boils back down to, and then how does that allow me, what does that mean in my capacity to exploit you, right? If I can sort of say you're not a human, then I can justify enslaving you, right? Then I can justify, you know, doing experiments on you because you don't feel pain, right? I can justify all of that. And so like the label of human is just as political as the label of monster. And by stepping into that monstrousness in a roundabout, very romantic, poetic kind of way, it's you reclaiming your humanity. Because humans are animals, right? We're just mammals, right? It's a full circle situation.
Yeah, and I think this also speaks to the Sylvia Winter piece that I'm kind of quoting when I use the phrase auto-overturn, because it's a rewriting of the narrative in which we do not attempt to slay the monster in the labyrinth. Instead, we give it tools. We teach, you know, and by that I mean a very specific monster, which is Black and brown people, queer people, people who are oppressed. As you pointed out, there are many different monsters. And I truly believe that colonialism is a mother who feeds us, in that her ideologies become inseparably hidden in our own cognition. Mm. And that is something that we have to fight and try to bring illumination to at all costs. In order for the children born later on to not feed from that same, you know, poisonous breast. Because monsters beget monsters. And so in that way, I view none of us as human. Mm-hmm. I view all of us as monstrous of some kind or another. And perhaps the only way to politically restore anyone to the status of human being is to destroy colonialism and But unfortunately, like, you need the sword, you need to feed on blood, which implies a monstrous.
Yeah, and that idea of feeding on colonialism, right? Taking it into yourself as some, like, horrible, like, Eucharist. there is Frantz Fanon in the Wretched of the Earth. They talk about, like, decolonization as a surgical process, a self-surgical process. It's an acknowledgement that, yes, this is inside of you, right? It is the sort of xenomorph that has, not the xenomorph, the face hugger that's latched onto you and it's injected something into you. And we have to sort of be, I forget her name in Prometheus, but we have to be willing to sort of, like, no anesthetic, right? Like, get into that machine and, like, cut it out of us before it hurts us from the inside, before it bursts out of us and leaves nothing of us behind. And so, yeah, it's like this self-surgical process, and it's bloody and it's gross and it's painful, but it's so necessary because you but the first step is acknowledging that there is something inside of you, something that you don't want to be there, and something that is parasitic in nature. Yeah, and like getting that out and replacing it with something else, right? Something that maybe isn't as parasitic, or maybe it is in some other strange way, but in a way that also kind of helps you. It's like a mutually beneficial, what's the word I'm looking for, in nature, where a symbiotic relationship between you and that thing that's inside of you, instead of it simply being just taking, and you not being able to get anything in return.
Oh, I loved that. I adore that you brought up Fanon. I have not read any of his work, but that is one of Sylvia Winter's inspirations. Oh. So I'm definitely going to have to read this essay now.
Yeah, it's a full book. I'm still working through it, but like the preface and the first chapter on like specifically on violence, that's what it's about. In the dehumanization process, and you know what happens when you dehumanize a people, tell them that they're animals, tell them that the only language they understand is violence. What happens when they are fed up, right? Like, they're going to respond with violence. And so, yeah, highly recommend.
Okay, maybe a potential question that's going to ruffle some feathers, but I'll embrace the taboo. Do you think that people who lean more towards the respectable, that comes from an impulse of being opaque to their own oppression, not wanting to identify with it if they are queer, black, or brown, or a woman, as opposed to, I guess, just not having experienced enough oppression to care?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think we've all experienced enough oppression to care, right? Especially, you know, with the more intersections you sort of exist in or at, right? Like, it's you experience more sooner, right? And so, you're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and you're already being told about, like, you're already being taught how to engage with police in order to get out of those situations alive, right? You're still a baby, you know what I'm saying? And so it's like, we have all experienced enough to be pissed off enough, right? Even those of us with the most privilege, right, have experienced, I would argue, have experienced enough. It's just that, like you said, that opaqueness, that desire to kind of turn a blind eye or to hold out hope that it's possible for you to find a semblance of success within this system as it exists right now, right? You're looking to be, I mean this in the abstract sense and also in the very real, like, social sense, you're looking to be assimilated into this beast. So that hopefully when it's thrashing about, right, and it's sort of, it's raising the land and everyone else, hopefully you can kind of be sort of kind of excluded from that to a certain extent. Like, you know, you're gonna feel it. Like, you'll complain when you get that bill every month and you're like, this is too damn expensive, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're aware of what's happening, but you're like, this is too damn expensive, but you know what, I'm not gonna say too much about it because I don't want to lose the job that allows me to be able to afford it, And again, Mars asks you, and depending on how much you've immersed yourself, it demands you to say, like, fuck that, right? Like, I've been writing about sort of this mysticism, this martial mysticism, and likening it to like actual sort of like mystical practice, this idea of like quasi asceticism, right? Because like, what is boycotting and it, you know, what is boycotting if not the willingness to function with less in the name of a greater cause, right?
That's profound, David.
And so I'm thinking about it through that lens. And what does that mystical process look like? You know, I was talking to some friends about like war tax resistance, and some of the ways to sort of like get around paying taxes, and just in the research, it's like, we'll basically be poor, right? Like if you make below a certain amount of money, like you can't apparently be, you know, I'm not like claiming to be a tax expert. This is, I'm literally regurgitating what I found, like a quick like Google search. So don't take this as like advice.
I mean, that's what I did. That's what I did up before I was a student. And now I guess I owe for my student loans, but I never listed Saturn Vox as an LLC. Mm-hmm. So the government always thinks I make no money. So I don't pay them
it's
anything.
It's like, just be poor. But like you, that's what the mystics did. That's what the monks and the nuns, right? That's what they did. They gave away all of their material possessions. They went to live in these convents and monasteries and ate one meal a day and wore the same clothes. And, you know, they just prayed all day, except our prayer looks like, it looks different. It's a both and situation. Yes, there is. I never want to diminish the role of like real magic in activism, right? Like I don't want to reduce magic down to like a metaphor, mysticism down to a metaphor, when it comes to this work as I'm exploring it. And like I also want to just be—I forgot where I was going with that. So we're just going to leave that where it is.
Well, you know, it's making me think magic is always absolutely political. Like, and that's one of the things that I think why it is important for esotericism to become less taboo, so that we can, if you really want to know your history, you need to know how much magic has been implicit in every war, in every revolution. It has been utilized by both sides. And that is something that gets completely glossed over, but it's such a profound truth. And it was making, what you were talking about was making me think explicitly of the Haitian Revolution and the usage of the loi to help the oppressed people of Haiti overthrow their oppressors in blood and violence, as was necessary.
Very necessary. And then, you know, I don't want to like impose like one, like I don't want to sort of impose like my sort of planetary framework onto that, but like it's worth noting that the loi they called on were very fiery and very bloody spirits, right? And so like I can't say, or I don't feel comfortable saying like, oh yes, those were martial spirits, but like they were fiery, they were of that they were of a similar nature, right?
They were of a similar
absolutely
current.
And there's definitely that. I think about like Nat Turner, who I have in the past written about in a malefic solar context, right? So there's some of that overlap, but also you could definitely see like the martial element. The only reason I tend to lean with Nat Turner specifically, the only reason I tend to lean into the sort of solar lens, the malefic solar lens, is because of the elements of prophecy in his narrative. And omens, right? Like looking to the sky specifically for omens. But even with all of that being said, you could definitely say that Nat Turner was of a martial nature, right? Like beyond a shadow of a doubt. Even in, and here's another taboo, even in his indiscriminate killing of children as well, like his intentional killing of children in that revolution, right? Because he knew that that was so taboo that that was what's going to make that was going to make the headlines, right? And so like if we're thinking about Mars as this from a propagandistic perspective, right? You think about, you know, the witch, they're baby killers, right? Oh, they eat babies, right? Like Nat Turner really embodied that, right? Like, he embodied that monstrous, like, baby killer, you know, nature in the name of his, yeah. in the name of his cause. And so I definitely think there's like a lot to explore there.
Not that I or you are giving any benefic quality to right. killing babies, but it is palatable to say I have to do something to get them to fucking exactly. pay attention to me. And that involves crossing the boundary of what they consider to be, you know, quote unquote manageable, mm-hmm. because they already know we're angry. They already know we're pissed. They've developed a series of, you know, tactics and tools to silence or even just ignore the way that we choose to speak out that anger, that there does seem to be like a, you have to cross that boundary. You have to go into the space of taboo-ness in order to be taken seriously when you are experiencing the terror of that level of
the
oppression.
Extreme terror, right? Like, we are constantly being pushed to the brink of what we can experience, right?
That's why I'm like, let's burn down yeah, every like, bank. Yeah. Let's throw fucking bricks in all their windows. Yeah, like that, I'm not trying to march on the highway. I'm trying to burn down Chase Bank. I think, you know, it's one of those things where I often ask myself, like, what can I do to... Like, what can I do to help save the forest? What can I do to help create homes and water and safety for all Semitic people, Arabs and Jews alike? And I think we've touched on a need for a linguistic revolution to stop feeding off the monster of colonialism, as we've said, but also to stop being afraid of Mars. Stop telling people with cancer Mars to not work with Mars. Stop being afraid of Mars and start teaching people. And this is really also Ferre. It's like pedagogy is everything. Don't give people fish. Teach them how to fish. Don't tell people avoid Mars. You know, I'll help you with your Mars things. Say, here's how you can Mars in a way that's safe. Here's how you can direct it in a way that is revolutionary.
Absolutely. And that's mysticism, right? Like that, and that's why mystics were, I'm not gonna say always, but were occasionally seen as dangerous, right, to authority figures, because like mysticism is a threat to the authority, because mysticism is itself a claim to authority, right? It's you saying, I don't need you, right? Institution, or you know, priest, et cetera, to tell me how to engage with God, with spirit, with mystery. I have direct revelation. And I can sort of work with that. And like, of course, like on a very literal level, like I'm very like, how do I phrase that? I was going to say very like pro hierarchy in spirituality. Like I acknowledge the importance of like sort of initiatory hierarchies, for example, like in different traditions, right? Like I think there is something to be said, I say that phrase a lot, for the sort of safety measures that come with, like, for example, if you are initiating into an ATR, right, like you don't want to just go tapping into like these very fiery loa, right, like without anyone who has done it before. And so yeah. like, I do see the importance of that, but I also think that the role of the priest or the sort of leader, if you will, the religious leader, is to act as a facilitator of people's individual journeys, right? I'm here to sort of bring you to the starting line so that I can release yes. you and you can run your own race at your own pace, right?
I love this. I feel like it's not necessarily a hierarchy that you are speaking on so much as an acknowledgement of where yeah. you are at in a particular absolutely, journey. Yeah. To be able to acknowledge maybe the other has a teaching they can give me, and instead of being opposed to to being wrong or opposed to having to sever off something that I thought was true to me but may actually be dangerous, to be receptive to a teaching. I mean, from my understanding of what makes the initiatory aspect of ATR so important is the teaching, having that access to the elder who can impart the knowledge onto you, but also a tether to not allow the non-human other to impose on your agency and somehow take control. And that is really always been a huge concern of mine when I see usually white people just willy-nilly work with Loa or Orisha or, you know, the Movembe, because it's like you're dealing with something that is so outside of what we as a Western culture have an understanding of, and you need that guidance and that tether of the teaching of the elders who have maybe made mistakes or been stopped from making the same mistakes, so that you do not become just a puppet for something else's will.
And, you know, our Western culture is so, this is another sort of wisdom gleaned from in his Ismatu Gwendolyn piece about Western society and our relationship to addiction, and how we are all addicted to this system. We're addicted to the comforts of this system. And the reason that's relevant here and to what you were just talking about having that tether, Mars is a presence of intoxication, right? It's you get worked up into that frenzy, and it's intoxicating. You're even without the use of sort of other substances, right? Like you're on a high, right? You're drunk on something. And so it's like you want to be able to have that tether, right? That other thing, whether it be another planetary presence or a human that you can sort of latch onto, or some other type of spirit or that you can latch onto to sort of bring you back out of that space, right? Whether it is a benefic solar or a Venusian or a person that you can sort of lean on, an elder or something that you can lean on, an ancestral relationships, ancestor veneration is a big part of my spiritual practice, because it's nice when you're dealing with the inhuman and the more than human, to be able to just like talk to grandma, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? And not have to think about like being consumed and torn apart and blah, 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 right? It's just, you know, it's just a conversation. So yeah, for sure.
Oof, I love that. All right. Well, this has been an immensely powerful episode. Speaking of power, I'm no wonder that it is. I always do like to end the pod on the same question. So what I like to do is just throw the mic over to you and say, if there's anything that I've, you know, forgotten to ask, you would be remiss if you didn't say, if you have a poem or there's something you feel in your heart a longing to give life to, this is your moment, and I'm handing the mic over to you.
I recently, or probably like 2 months ago, wrote this piece in dedication to this like martial presence, where I talk about, and this is just me reading directly from the post, in the visionary body, I have seen glimpses of a personal fate beyond this form and the immediate comprehension of my own sensibilities, one of strange pains and masochistic expressions of becoming. These are visions in which I am positioned as prey, though not to be utterly destroyed, at least not for the sole sake of destruction. Instead, there is an intentional breaking, a bending, a cutting away, a splintering of the capital S self into calcious shrapnel, teased and woven back into a form only somewhat familiar to me. And so I, you know, I'm not sharing any of those specific visions, but like I sort of followed that up with this relatively short piece. Who am I kidding? It's not very short at all, but it's not excessively long. called Blood of Your Blood, Flesh of Your Flesh. And it's just me speaking to this martial mystery, right? Based on the glimpses that I've sort of gotten of it in my mystical work. So just I sort of want to go through that, and one, to give listeners a sort of an idea of, because of course these spirits are going to manifest in our lives in different ways, right? Like I believe spirits show up and provide us what we need out of them, and oftentimes or occasionally what we expect out of them, if that makes any sense. And so they kind of take on those forms. It's them speaking in a language that is familiar to us already. But this is just how it's shown up for me. And I just want to make that known. So when my skull is crushed beneath your monstrous soul, let it be done without that brutal quickness you know so well. Give me a moment to fathom the bulging of matter and the dissonant squelching, to savor the expulsion forced by some terrible weight. When you break me open, spill me like wine from a broken chalice, send me rushing forth as a crimson tide, and I will gather at your feet. I will press from between your toes, freshly stained and glistening with the gelatinous remnants of sight. When you cook me over the pyre, use my fat to fuel the flame. Simmer me in iron, immersed in the sulfurous stewings of malice. Consume me and drink of my bittered infusions. I will be talon tender, a meal of prime infernal flavor. Strike a match against my spine and ignite me with your primal will. Unyielding source of locomotion, rocket, comet, bullet, ram, cracking bones like bolts of lightning, severity is your domain. Forger of heresies, grant me access to your armory. Teach me the science of slaughter so I may kill my gods and pillage their sacred gardens. New fruits emerging, books of judgment burned, and shame still raw devoured whole. Send me on the scorching wind, your horsemen, a plague in your name. I will sing with the sands of deserts hissing under a scarlet sun, and with a thundering voice I will shatter monuments of false might, casting despair onto the minds of kings. Many named and all inflaming, you fill me with such heat. Jagged and throbbing, you tear me from within, yet drop for drop I am revived, a hallowed thing made full by your animating presence. You sink your needle teeth into my jugular, sending streams of venom to my heart, pumping acid love, ecstatic delirium, the scraping of nerves like knives on oiled stone. I take the back of your head and hold you there, waste not a single liter of your essence. Blood of your blood, flesh of your flesh. You reform me in the image of your beloved beasts, skin of viper, wing of bat, arachnid's thorn, and flame of dragons, your vile conceptions made manifest, repulsive in the eyes of man. With a panting tongue, you lap up offerings of debauchery, drunkenness performed beneath your blazing gaze, bodies interlocked in orgiastic displays, pulsating arrangements and breathing pleasures personified. From a bleeding palm, you pour the fluids of devotion. Viscous rivers and caustic rains, every drop a tempest of desires blended in the pits of sin. And with my mouth agape, I took to your red heavens and drink of your communion. I sing in the cathedral carved within your belching depths, and my voice becomes a choir of grinding crescendos, hordes of raucous birds and roaring things, firmly heard, though shouting with a sinister dissonance. Hail the harbinger of screams, eater of innocence and chimeric abomination. Hail the roaring hatred, weaver of disgust and agent of corruption. Hail the carnivorous womb, blackened cauldron of ash and soot. Hail the lord of crimson poisons, whose breath is of rust and scathing fumes. Hail the secret name of rage, wrathful judge, and phlegathonic essence. And that's the end of it.
Oof, I got chills. That was beautiful. And haunting. Yes. Which Mars can be both things.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing all of this lovely martial mysticism that speaks songs of power towards revolution. It has been such an honor to have you on and to talk about these things. And I hope that it does create a rumble in the souls of those who listen, that they may find the bravery to allow themselves to embrace the taboo and to embrace the monster and to fight.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's been an honor to speak with you today. Thank you for pulling all of this out of me in this like free form conversation. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure.